Namaste Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 15, Texts 29 to 31. So texts 29 and 30 don't have purport, so I'll just read them myself and we'll chant text 31 together. So text 29. Ojo svinam balam jetum na samarto stikashchana bhavadvido bhavanvapi varjiyet vesparam harim Vijayashyati nakopyenam brahmateja samaditam nasya shakta parastatum kritantasya yata janaha. Translation: neither you nor your men can conquer the most powerful Bali. Indeed, no one but the Supreme Personality of Godhead can conquer him, for he is now equipped with the supreme spiritual power, Brahma Tejas. As no one can stand before Yamaraj, no one can stand before Bali Maharaj. Text 30. Tasman nilayamutsrijya yuyam sarve trivishtapam yatak kalam pratik chanto yatra shachor viparyaya. Translation: therefore, waiting until the situation of your enemies is reversed, you should all leave the heavenly planet and go elsewhere where you will not be seen. Text 31 we can chant together. Esha vipra Balo Darkaha Samprati Urjita Vikramaha Tesham Eva Pamanena Sanubando Vinangshyati. Esha vipra balo darka samprat yurjita vikramaha tesham eva pamanena sanubando vinangshiti. Esha vipra balo darka samprat yurjitam vikramaha tesham eva pamanena sanubando vinangshiti. Esha vipra balo darkaha samprat urjita vikramaha tesham eva pamanena sanabando vinangshiti. Esham vipra balo darka samprat urjita vikramaha tesham eva pamanena shati. Shavi prabalo darka prat urjita vikramaha Tesham eva pamanena sanamando vidangshiti. Esha vipravalo darka samprat yujita vikramaha Esha meva pamanena sanubando venangshyati. Vaishnavis, Esha viprabalo darka samvirujita vikramaha tesham eva pamanena sanubhando vinangshyati. Esha viprabalo darka Vanena Vangshiti Havipra below Dharaka Sampratyurjita Vikramaha Tesham eva pamanena sanubhando vinangshiti. Eshaha, this Bali Maharaj, viprabala udarkaha, flourishing because of the Brahminical power invested in him. Samprati, at the present moment. Urjita Vikramaha, extremely powerful. Tesham, of the same. Of the same Brahmanas. Eva, indeed, apamanena, by insult, sa anubandaha, with friends and assistants, vinangshiti, will be vanquished. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Bali Maharaj has now become extremely powerful because of the benedictions given him by the Brahmanas. But when he later insults the Brahmanas, he will be vanquished along with his friends and assistants. Please repeat. Bali Maharaj has now become extremely powerful because of the benedictions given him by the Brahmanas. But when he later insults the Brahmanas, he will be vanquished along with his friends and assistants. Purport. Bali Maharaj and Indra were enemies. Therefore, when Brihaspati, the spiritual master of the demigods, predicted that Bali Maharaj would be vanquished when he insulted the Brahmanas by whose grace he had become so powerful, Bali Maharaj's enemies were naturally anxious to know when that opportune moment would come. To pacify King Indra, Brihaspati assured him that the time would certainly come, for Brihaspati could see that in the future, Bali Maharaj would defy the orders of Shukracharya in order to pacify Lord Vishnu, Vamanadev. Of course, to advance in Krishna consciousness, one can take all risks. to please Vamanadeva, Bali Maharaj risked defying the order of his spiritual master, Shukracharya. Because of this, he would lose all of his property. Yet, because of the devotional service to the Lord, he would get more than he expected. And in the future, in the eighth Manvantar, he would occupy the throne of Indra again. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So just as, you know, we've gone through several months of hearing about and analyzing the pastime of the churning of the milk ocean, we're now entering into another major pastime of the Supreme Lord, where he incarnates as Lord Vamana, the dwarf incarnation, the dwarf Brahman incarnation of the Lord, at the request of Aditi, the mother of the demigods, in order to get the demigods' kingdom back from Bali Maharaj, who had conquered it. So it's an elaborate pastime with many lessons. I mean, the broad outline of it is that the demigods, they lost their kingdom. King Indra, the lord of the demigods, lost his kingdom to Bali Maharaj, the head of the demons who had conquered it. So to get it back, the Lord appears as a dwarf Brahman, Vamana, to Aditi, the mother of the demigods. And then he goes to a sacrifice that Bali Maharaj was performing. And he begs for 3 steps of land. Because he's a Brahman, and the Brahmins have right to ask charity from the king. So apparently he's asking only for a little bit of charity, 3 steps of land. So Bali Maharaj is saying, of course, I can give you 3 steps of land. But his spiritual master, Shukracharya, realizes this dwarf Brahmana is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's about to play a trick on Bali Maharaj and deprive him of his whole kingdom that he had conquered from Indra. So Shukracharya tries to forbid Bali Maharaj from carrying out that request of Vamana. But Bali Maharaj, because he's actually a great devotee, is destined to become one of the Mahajans, one of the great authorities in devotional service. He disobeys the order of his spiritual master and gives the 3 steps of land to Vamandev. So Vamandev, with his first step, he covers the whole earth, and his second step, he covers the whole universe. And then there's no place for him to put his 3rd step. So he arrests Bali Maharaj actually, Bali Maharaj says, well, you can put your third step on my head, indicating that he was prepared to become the servant of Lord Vamandeva. And that's actually the essence of devotional service, to surrender oneself and all one's possessions to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Lord then arranged for Bali to be sent to one of the subterranean heavenly planets in the lower part of the universe, to the planet of Sutala. And it said that there he enjoyed facilities greater than those given to the demigods. So, in, you know, the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's some description of the different planetary systems in the universe. And as part of the description of Sutala, which is one of these subterranean heavenly planets, where the facilities are even greater than in the heavenly planets, there's also a description of Bali Maharaj. And, you know, the question comes up, why exactly did he get those facilities in Sutala? And some people suggest, well, it's because he gave charity to Lord Vishnu, to Lord Vama. According to the Karma Kanda system, you know, the system of fruitive activity, if you give in charity to a proper person, you get some result in this life or the next. You get it back. But, you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam says, well, that's not the reason. It's simply because of his pure devotional service to the Lord chose to grant him some material opulence in the Sutala subterranean heavenly planets. Because the result of devotional service is love of Krishna, nothing else. But if the Lord desires, you know, he can give benedictions to his devotees. So in his purport, you know, Srila Prabhupada says that if you happen to see a devotee is blessed with a lot of material opulence in terms of wealth and followers and so on, if he's actually a pure devotee, then you shouldn't think, well, that's because of his karma or his material abilities. It's actually a blessing of the Lord so that the devotee can carry out his or her service without difficulty. And just like sometimes when people would see the opulence that Srila Prabhupada had been given by Krishna, they would think, well, that's because he was a Vaishya. You know, he was a businessman in his previous life before he became a sannyasi, and he just knew how to make money and organize. No. The opulence that a pure devotee gets is a gift of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to enable the devotee to carry out service properly. So, therefore, Srila Prabhupada says in his purports there that if devotees are given any opulence by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to help them in their service. It should be used strictly for that purpose. Not for sense gratification of any kind. So it's a big responsibility, because normally if one is given great opulence, great wealth, lots of followers and things like that, it can become a distraction from pure devotional service. As Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam Taya Pritichetasam Vyavasayatmaka Buddhi Samadau Navidiyate. So Bhoga and Aishvarya, if one is given opulence in terms of wealth and property and followers and fame, beauty, or whatever opulence we're talking about, great intellectual ability, whatever opulence, kind of opulence we're talking about, if a devotee gets it, it can be distracting. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam taya prittichetasam, the mind, the intelligence, can become entrapped by these things. And then vyavasayatmaka buddhi, then one doesn't have the focus, the undivided intelligence that's necessary to carry out devotional service, samadhana vidhiyate. So, you know, one definition of samadhi is that it means focusing the intelligence on the process of devotional service without deviation. So, and we often see in the world that those who are possessing great opulence, they're very reluctant to engage in devotional service. So it's an interesting pastime. There are many lessons to be learned from it, and over the next few weeks and months we'll be, you know, going through the elements of this pastime. And in terms of opulence, basically we see there are two kinds of people in the world, basically two kinds. Those who are after maximum entanglement with the material energy and material opulences, and those who are after minimal entanglement, you know, with material opulences and the material energy. And neither one of them is in the correct position. I mean, Srila Prabhupada would sometimes give the example that, you know, somebody is like robbing a bank. Of course, that's not good. You know, you're taking somebody else's property for yourself. And then somebody else is going, looking at the bank and saying, oh, I renounce it all. It's not yours to renounce anyways. But still, there are these two kinds of personalities. Those who are very attracted to material opulence, and those who are trying to renounce it. And both of them can be engaged in devotional service. And we see in the Srimad Bhagavatam many accounts of people with great opulence and power, you know, great kings, rulers of the entire earth, rulers of the entire universe, even who become devotees of the Lord. And then we see there are also renunciants who become great devotees of the Lord. So, you know, those who are striving for maximum entanglement with the material energy, you know, they want lots of wealth. You know, they're trying to accumulate lots of wealth. And there are people who are after minimal entanglement, and they try to get by with as little as they can. And both of them can be engaged in devotional service. Then we see that in terms of followers, there are some personalities, they want the maximum number of followers. You know, we see that there are generals in charge of whole armies. They've got tens of thousands of men who on their order will give up their lives. Or they're heads of big corporations. You know, they have hundreds or thousands of people working for them. If they say, okay, I want a factory built here, you know, they go and they do it. And then we see there are those with minimal followers. They don't want to be responsible for anybody or anything. And both of them, they can be engaged in devotional service. Yeah, they can. There are devotees who have responsibilities over other devotees, and then some devotees, they're a little detached. You know, there can be a devotee like Narada Muni who's just wandering here and there with no followers. Or they can be great devotees like Maharaj Yudhisthira in charge of a whole kingdom. Yeah, but they can both be engaged in devotional service. And then in terms of family life, some people, they like to be surrounded by family members and relatives and offspring. And then some are more comfortable in a more renounced position. But both of them are engaged in devotional service. There are examples like Bhaktivinod Thakur, you know, who had, I think, was it 11 children? 11 children. But one of them became a great acharya, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the spiritual master of Srila Prabhupada. So there are great householder devotees like that. And then there are devotees who, like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, were Nashtika brahmacharis, never entangled in family life. So whether one is a possessor of great opulence like Bali Maharaj or is in a more renounced position, one can become a devotee of the Supreme Personality of the Godhead. And the key is to use everything in devotional service on the instructions of higher authority. So, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaridi tibrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusha paman. Whether one has all desires, in other words, the desire for maximum entanglement with the material energy, or sarvakama, or one is akama, without any such desires, then whatever one's position is one should engage in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in terms of Bali Maharaj, yeah, he's going to give his whole kingdom, which he had conquered from Lord Indra, he's going to give it to Vaman. Vamanadeva is going to give it back to the demigods, give the kingdom back to the demigods, but he's going to give Bali Maharaj even more opulence by giving him this position in Sutala, in the subterranean heavenly planets. And then in a future Manvantar, we're now living in the Vaivasvata Manvantar period. And then it's the seventh Manvantar. And during the eighth Manvantar, Bali is going to occupy the post of Indra. Indra is like a post, like President of the United States is a post. And then there was President Bush, President Obama, President Reagan. They're different personalities who occupy the post. So in the 13th chapter of the 8th canto, which we just went over a few weeks ago, there was mention that during the 8th Manvantara, Bali Maharaj would become Indra and have the kingdom of Indra, as Srila Prabhupada is mentioning here in the last line of this purport. So, how does Srila Prabhupada put it? Because of this, he would lose all his property, yet because of devotional service to the Lord, he would get more than he expected. And in the future, in the eighth Manvantara, he would occupy the throne of Indra again. So sometimes the mercy of the Lord is shown by his taking away a person's material opulence, and sometimes his mercy is shown by giving some material opulence. But the position of the devotee is to situate himself in devotional service and then accept as Krishna's mercy whatever happens. I'll stop there. Any question or comments? Oh, I was going to make, before the questions, just an announcement that this Friday evening, which is Halloween evening, there's going to be a special Harinam Sankirtan party, chanting of the holy names of Krishna, leaving from the temple at 5:30 and going to West Hollywood. So if there's anybody out there listening who wants to do that, they can show up at the temple here at 5:30. And if they want to join the party, then around 6 o'clock they can be in West Hollywood.
Pacific Design Center.
In front of the Pacific Science Center. Design Center. Okay, yeah, at around 6 o'clock they'll be gathering in front of the Pacific Design Center. And from there they'll be going chanting. If you want to join, please come for a wild experience.
Haribo. Haribo. Good thinking.
Okay. Such an annoying.
If possible, I have two questions. But anyway, okay. The first one is that we all know that Bali Maharaj is a Mahajan after what happened, became a Mahajana. wouldn't his position be in hierarchy, in a spiritual hierarchy, be diminished by he becoming Indra in the eighth Manvantara? Because I was thinking, it's almost like saying, a devotee joins, he takes care of the bhaktas, he's a temple commander, sannyasi, GVC, and later on, he's not doing that service anymore, he's just a temple commander, which is, within spiritual grounds, is okay, but in hierarchy, wouldn't that be diminished of being Mahajana to be a Indra ruler, which deals with a lot of fighting and a lot of material affairs? But being a Mahajana is different. Can you please explain that? That's the first question.
Okay. So the question is, it's mentioned here that in a future Manvantara, Bali is going to take the post of Indra. And the question is, doesn't that seem like diminishing the position of a devotee? But it seems that if we look at the actual history of pure devotees, we see that they occupy, you know, many positions. For example, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was a great pure devotee of the Lord. From the external point of view, he was occupying the position of a magistrate in the British administration. So, but he was still a pure devotee, and he was still producing, you know, Vaishnava literature and preaching, even though he was occupying that post in the British administration of India. So there's a larger system of administration in the universe where there are different personalities, you know, different demigods who have particular responsibilities. But at the same time, they could also be pure devotees, just like, you know, there may be devotees who have positions where they're working. You know, maybe somebody's not able to live full-time in the temple. They have some job outside the temple, but they're still very nice devotees. And from their position, whatever it is, maybe they invite their friends to come to the temple. So it is an interesting question, but it does seem there are examples where...
You still have the question, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave up everything. He wouldn't come back to do, you know, being a judge again. That's, you know, just for argument's sake. The example was given perfectly. You know, he came to teach us Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Krishna used him in that way. But I'm saying after he became, like, totally renounced, he wouldn't, like...
Well, when did he become totally renounced?
Well, giving up, let's say, like, that post of judge was done at one time, that was part of his service, but later on, when he actually became totally in a higher, you can say, understanding of Krishna Prema, he didn't want to... In my understanding, I'm sorry, picturing him going back to be a judge again, doing that service, a judge, or minister.
Yeah, another way of looking at it is sometimes a person, you know, like Dhruva Maharaj, he had to accept, you know, he, you know, became a devotee, but he still had to accept the kingdom. You know, he had renounced everything. You know, he had gone to the forest, meditated on Krishna, saw Krishna, but still, you know, he had to accept the kingdom, the rule of the kingdom. And then in the end, then he went back to Godhead. But Also, I think it's in the fifth canto where this pastime is being discussed. It's mentioned that whatever these posts are, it's just for a flash. You know, if you occupy the position of a demigod, usually for the length of a manvantara, which is 71 cycles of four yugas each. It's about 300 million years. But in terms of eternal time, it's actually nothing. But it's a good question. Those are the thoughts I had. Archita wanted to say something about this question.
Yeah. If you look at the list of Mahajans, you'll see that Yamaraj is one, right? So he was in his post. He came as Vidura, then he went back to the post. You see? So it's not that you can't go back. There's nothing wrong with serving in Krishna's universal administration. It's not like an emotion. It's not like you're doing something. Look at Bhishma Dev. He actually fought against Krishna and the Pandavas, but he's still a Mahajan. So that's why it's very difficult to understand these personalities without hearing from authorities. Otherwise, you could judge, what kind of Mahajan is this? He's fighting against God. He's shooting arrows at him, you know. What kind of great soul is that? So if you go through the list, you'll find that each of their situation is very, very interesting. And it's not so easy to understand just from regular vision.
Okay, a second question.
You mentioned about being charitable, and we know that a person who is charitable, he's acknowledged, he wouldn't give charitable to just anyone. So these brahmanas who give benedictions to the demons obviously makes me think they're not Vaishnava brahmanas, because otherwise why would they give benediction? Can you make a comment in that? Why would they give benedictions knowing that these people or these demons are going to cause havoc in the universe?
You mean like Lord Brahma giving benediction to Hiranyakashipu? Sometimes, like if you're a government officer, you know, you have to follow the rules of your position. You know, that if somebody does this, then they get that. You know, so it could be like that it's their position. And another factor is the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for his Leela. You know, if like a Leela is to be carried out and somebody has to do something for that Leela to happen, then it happens like that. It's like you say, you could explain, well, like, why would Brahma give benedictions to... I mean, was it Brahma? Brahma gave the benedictions to Hiranyakashipu. But still, if you look at, even though he was given the benedictions, as he was obligated to do, you know, it's one of the features of having an administrative post that you're in control of certain things, and then if people do something, what they're supposed to do in order to get some benediction from you, then you have to give it without discrimination, I guess. That's one way of looking at it. And then the other way, it's Leela. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.